Hello, everyone, and welcome to an episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and listening. I am your host, Neil Horwitz. You can follow me on Twitter at NJH287 and hit me up on LinkedIn as well and see more episodes on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, and other content and archives at dsmsports.net. I think you're really going to like today's show. It is baseball season, or just around the corner at least, and the Seattle Mariners have been doing a fantastic job with content and really have been doing a good job for a long time now, and that is in large part thanks to Nathan Rauschenberg. He's our guest today. He has been with the Mariners for a few years now. He is the senior digital marketing manager for them, and we're going to have a great conversation with him, really learn how what goes into their strategy, how they work with MLB Advanced Media, and how they measure the success on social media. Just so much great stuff coming from Nathan, so stick around for that. First, this episode's helpful tool. And this episode's helpful tool is all about trying to stand out in the Twitter timeline. You know, we're always talking about thumb stoppers. How can you cut through the clutter when there's so much other noise out there, some good, some not so good? And one way that stands to stand out is to change up your font. You know, it's the same font on the Twitter app unless you take the active step to change it, at least for now. And one easy site that allows you to do that is called LingoJam, LingoJam, JAM.com. It's really mobile-friendly, as it should be, because Twitter is a pretty mobile app. And all you need to do is just either type or copy and paste what you want to write in that different font, and boom, you have a bunch of different selections to choose from. Very different-looking fonts, some festive, some just in your face, and definitely a good way to stand out. Even if you want to change it in your handle, you can do that as well. But give it a go. I think you'll see that it'll at least get your fans talking a little bit, get others looking and looking twice for sure. Do not overuse it by any means, but it's a good way to include emphasis, change things up, maybe do a different font when there's a quote. Just a different way so that all of a sudden when someone's scrolling through their feed, that thumb's going a mile a minute, they see something different. They go, oh, I'm going to stop. And therefore, you have more eyeballs. So, give it a go. Changing font can be fun, simple, not too crazy, but have a little fun with it. And again, it's lingojam.com. All right, that was this helpful tool. We'll be right back with Nathan Rauschenberg of the Seattle Mariners. All right, back from this episode's helpful tool. Really psyched today to be joined by someone from my favorite sport to follow. I've been a fan of this team, at least in as a neighbor to one of my favorite teams back in the spring training days. We're joined today by Nathan Rauschenberg. He is a senior digital marketing manager for the Seattle Mariners. Welcome to the podcast today, Nathan.
Thanks, Neil. Thanks so much for having me.
Really looking forward to talking baseball. The sun's starting to come back out. Spring's around the corner, and it is baseball season. And the Mariners are among many clubs that do a great job in MLB. And looking forward to picking your brain today. But before we get to the meat of our discussion, we want to learn a little more about you. Tell us about your career path, how you got developed some skills early on, and made the move to the Mariners. And any tips for folks that want to do what you do?
Yeah, well, I'll try to keep it brief because I don't want to have the entire podcast be about my background. But I studied marketing at Seattle University, actually just probably, a mile away from Safeco Field. I could walk from the apartment building that I was living in at the time. Mm-hmm. And saw a internship posting for the Mariners in the sales department. And at the time, I didn't really have a lot of work experience. I was just bussing tables trying to pay for tuition. And so I thought, well, it's the Mariners, big team, and it'd be fun to work for the team. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure there's plenty of really qualified people that applied for it. So I just kind of ignored the email. This is our inner school job network, like email distribution list thing. And then after the job posting had expired, there was another email that came through, and it looked like they had extended it, the job posting. So I thought, well, I guess maybe not enough people applied. So I put my name in and ended up getting the internship in sales, just doing the dirty work, and they ended up liking me and gave me a part-time job just answering phones. This is back before social media really was prevalent. So back then, if everybody will believe this, people used to call the team to ask questions like what time do gates open? Can I bring this in? Where's this section in the ballpark? Things like that. So I did that for 2 years in college, great part-time job,
And I imagine that that kind of role, you kind of by nature have to know a lot about what's going on in the organization because you probably get questions from all different kinds of people.
Yeah, exactly. And some of them just wanted to talk baseball. So, season ticket holders, they're just looking to, they hear something on sports talk radio and they want to call in and talk about it. So
give Jay Buhner an extension. Give Randy Johnson an extension.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I'll just forward you to the GM. But because of that, actually, my boss at the time, she wanted everybody in the department to have kind of their own responsibility, something that they could own. So one person would be in charge of fulfilling Mariner magazine orders and another person in charge of birthday packages and things like that. Mm-hmm. And because I was a part-timer, she couldn't give me sort of the day-to-day stuff. But she thought, well, people like to call and talk about baseball. So, Nathan, your responsibility will be to get everybody in the department, keep them up to date on what's happening in baseball, not just the Mariners, but
wow,
in baseball.
So that's awesome.
So that we all know what's going on. It was, just sort of something to keep me involved. But
yeah.
I took it a step further. It was a pretty small department, maybe 10 of us, and we're all friends, and I like to have fun and I like writing. So I turned it into the Rauschenberg Report, and
nice.
It was sort of a, it was written for my 10 friends essentially. So kind of, a little bit snarky or, some jokes in there. And then one of my friends in the department, Dan Boyer, who now does animations for the Oregon Ducks, actually the Wild Kingdom. If you look at some of their stuff, he does great work, but he would draw comic strips for the Rauschenberg Report.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple weeks into it or a couple issues into it, I added a second page, where I would interview a member of the front office. So, our department was kind of in the back corner. We didn't really know a lot of the people in other departments. So I thought, oh, this will be a way for us to learn about what other people do. And what I didn't realize was that was a great way for me to meet all of these people in other departments.
Yeah.
And everybody was so welcoming and friendly. So I ended up, I still have copies of the Rauschenberg Report and I'm going through it. And I'm like, man, I was just this like junior in college interviewing all these VPs in the organization for fun. And then they got to know me. So that's how I met Kevin Martinez, our now senior VP of marketing and communications,
mm-hmm.
and Greg Green, who is our senior director of marketing.
And this was all content that was, the Rauschenberg Report was just for internal distribution. Like as a fan, I'm like, geez, I want to see those interviews.
Yeah. It was just for internal purposes. And it's funny. My subscription base grew every time I would interview somebody outside in a different department, because then, their coworkers would want to see the issue. And then they're like, well, why, I want to get a copy of this each week. So by the time I hung up my writing tools and retired, I think I had probably half the front office at that point was a weekly reader.
That's awesome. What great initiative by you.
Yeah. And so I think that's what Greg in particular really liked. Turns out when I interviewed him, he said, I used to do that when I was an intern for, I think it was Fisher Broadcasting up the street. Except he said I did it daily. So he was giving me a little bit of a hard time, but I think he liked that. And, as I got close to, graduation, I talked to Greg about, what opportunities might exist at Copacino Fujikado, our advertising agency.
Mm-hmm.
The Mariners helped get me an internship there. And then just by a stroke of luck, my first week as an intern there was the final week for the junior account manager on the Mariners account. So
mm-hmm.
just sort of this natural fit. Well, okay, we've got this intern who actually came from the Mariners, who has an interest in obviously advertising. And account management is actually a great way to start your career in general. I learned so much in those first 2 years about branding and voice and, identifying your marketplace and media planning and buying and all that. So spent 2 years there, and then the rise of social media began, and the Mariners decided to make that a full-time role, and they came and asked if I'd be interested. And of course I said yes.
And did you know much about social media at the time? And were you, I guess, a practitioner of it? Just not necessarily. I don't know how much of an element it was at the time of, in the industry overall, let alone in your role with the advertising agency.
Yeah, there were definitely some campaigns that we were doing at the time. One of my other clients, the Seattle Aquarium, they had a great campaign that had been going on for a couple of years around a goldfish. The whole thing was this goldfish wasn't unique enough to get into the Seattle Aquarium, where they have all kinds of fun and exotic fish. So his name was Leonard. It was Leonard the Goldfish, and the campaign was Let Leonard In. It was a great campaign, but with the rise of social media, we decided, well, Leonard needs his own Twitter account. And then they decided, well, we can't really afford to pay our senior copywriter to write all these tweets, but we've got Nathan, who's, you know, a junior account person who seems to like writing a little bit. And so then I'm really lucky. Mike Hayward, the senior copywriter I was just referring to, gave me that opportunity. And, you know, especially for considering I was on the account side, I mean, I think a lot of people probably enter the advertising world wanting to do the fun and creative stuff.
Yeah.
And so they start on the account side, but they don't always get those opportunities. And he was gracious enough and, you know, gave me the opportunity and really became kind of a mentor of sorts. And so, yeah, I got to do that. And because of the rise of social media, our agency in general was, you know, really exploring ways to utilize that. So we had a number of campaigns ongoing.
Okay. And I guess take me inside a little bit about how the Mariners are set up at the time. I know, knowing folks in baseball and kind of seeing the evolve over time, and I know early on it was definitely more collaboration with BAM. In some cases, BAM was MLB Advanced Media, that is, was oftentimes even tweeting for teams or controlling websites, and there's been frustrations there, but certainly has changed since. So I guess where were the Mariners at the time? Where was Mariners League Baseball at the time and when you first came on to do social for them?
Yeah, so this was 2012, and you're right that they still have an active role. I don't know how much you got into that conversation with Julian, or I'm not sure how many other MLB people you have on there, but I mean, Major League Baseball, unlike other leagues, they own and technically control everything done in the digital space. So they would post stuff. They thankfully on social media, I think they realized that there is value in teams being able to handle that if they have the interest. In the Mariners case, we were very interested in controlling our message, and you know, for a lot of obvious reasons,
right.
You don't necessarily want somebody over in New York who doesn't even follow the team very closely handling your account.
Well, and especially you coming from that branding and PR background, where you understood, having done stuff like Seattle Aquarium, understood the value of being able to craft your brand and control your message, which I'm sure it was a big part of wanting to take control of your content on social.
For sure. And you want to have your own voice, certainly within the marketplace, but even when you compare to other MLB teams, you want to be different. You want to be unique in a way that only the Mariners can.
No doubt. And it kind of was social your primary role then as you started coming up? Were you required to also kind of dip your toes in website content, even email? And I guess I think of digital marketing, I think of it being across the board, but were you more focused on social and driving KPIs through those platforms first and foremost?
Yeah, so my title from the beginning was digital marketing manager, which I actually even said during the interview process that I was glad that was the role. It wasn't just focused on social media.
Yeah.
Not that I don't like social media or, you know, even dare I say love it, but there's other aspects of marketing in the digital space that are not only important, but in some cases growing as well. So I oversee everything that we do in the digital space. So website, email, text messages, all of that, with of course Major League Baseball's help. So that's kind of the bonus of having them available, is that the team, they hire me to oversee all that, and then we have Major League Baseball helping execute all that. So we don't have to have our own web developer or you know, any specialists in those different categories, because they have a whole stable of them over in New York.
Very interesting. And so when you guys are then, and I want to jump back a little bit more to the evolutions of social as well from there, but if you guys are now creating an email marketing campaign or wanting to serve some ads to a certain audience, is that almost an order that you put into BAM to help execute, or are you working in collaboration with them? I'm curious about that.
Yeah, no, it's for sure. I think it's safe to say they pretty much have a hand in every part of that, the things that you said.
Yeah.
So if it's an email, I'm working with our web producer who's putting together the actual email itself. So basically the way that it would come about is I would draft an email. I'd say, here's the subject line, here's the headline, here's the image, here's all the text, you know, and then Major League Baseball is the one that puts it together. They hand us the proofs or email it, I guess.
Yeah.
They email us the email proofs and then we give the approval on it. So, and then same thing with ads, although, you know, with stuff like that, we are often working with our ad agency, my old friends over there. we'll put together a campaign. We've taken the design elements. We do those in-house. And so really we package them up. I put together a spreadsheet with all the traffic instructions, and then hand that off to Major League Baseball, who ends up, you know, turning them around and sending them out to different vendors and websites, you know, all the people, all the places that it runs.
And are you guys kind of giving recommendations or ideas of the targeting that you want? If it is an ad, like on Facebook, on Google, or is it kind of a collaboration of, you know, we're going to target Mariners fans in this area. If it's a family plan, we'll set the targeting appropriately there. How does that aspect work, if you can elaborate?
Yeah, so we do oversee the targeting. Depending on what the message is or the product is, that will often determine, you know, how targeted it actually gets.
Right.
But we also lean on both our agency and really I kind of look at Major League Baseball as its own agency too, because while the space has grown, so has their staff and their resources. So there's, you know, when I first started, I wish I had the numbers off the top of my head, but I mean, if they had one search, SEO person, at the beginning, I think they have probably closer to five, you know, doing it now. So in some ways, and that's true across all those different types of, digital marketing aspects. So, they have their own recommendations too, and we lean on them for insights. And what's nice is because they do it for 30 teams or, close to, I don't know if that's for sure every
right,
team,
right.
But they do it for so many, they can take some learnings from each. And it may vary by market or how you target, but there's certainly things that you can, insights you can get from looking at all of these different campaigns.
No, I think it's a unique space that they get to be in, and to be able to target maybe fans that have never entered the Mariners database or been to a game, but maybe have, you know, watched a couple of MLB.TV games or have been to the MLB.com website for the Mariners. They can retarget them, and there's so much data they have at their disposal they can use for your guys' benefit and when it comes to targeting, for sure. But I do want to step back a little bit to hear about how social has grown over the years. I mean, you've been there for a long time now, since 2012, and obviously stuff has changed since last week, let alone since 5-6 years ago. So tell me about how has social become a bigger priority over time, and how have you guys sought to either reallocate resources or brought on new staff to help satisfy as Instagram came along, as Snapchat came along, and just as video became more and more important, how has it kind of just evolved over the years there?
Yeah, you're right. It definitely has evolved. It's crazy to think that it was only, you know, roughly 6 years ago to think about where we're at now. But when I first started, Instagram didn't exist.
Yeah.
Pinterest was my first project when I joined. And I should add that I joined in mid-March. So pretty much right around, I guess, my 6 year anniversaries in another week or two. But if you just think about what that means from a practical standpoint, that means that day one, you're just a couple weeks away from opening day. So you're sort of
trial by fire.
Yeah, you're trying to figure out, okay, where's my seat and in the office, and where is this list of all these things I have to do before the games begin? So, yeah, Pinterest was my first project. Twitter was, I believe at that time, just pretty much text-based.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that, but I don't remember Rich Media being a part of it. And that's, you know, even on Facebook, the idea that you could upload videos, I remember when that first started to take off. So it has evolved. Kevin Martinez and Greg Green, who I mentioned earlier there, they always recognize the potential for social media. Mm-hmm. And a couple seasons before creating this full-time role, there was a seasonal position. Then they created my role. Then we added another seasonal position. And right now we are, our staff consists of myself, mm-hmm. Our coordinator, Colin O'Keefe. We have a digital content specialist, Andy Minarchek, who handles kind of the video production side. Mm-hmm. And then we have a in-game coordinator, Jose Rivera, who helps with a lot of things, but is responsible for helping us cover all of our games, our many 162 games, plus hopefully games in October. So it's grown for sure, and role has evolved as well.
How did it grow, Nathan? Like, was there a point where you had to basically ask for more help? Like, hey, you know, we have these more platforms to serve. We can get more out of more content. I need another digital person. Or is it kind of just it was recognized across the league that this is a growing space and we need to? We're always fascinated in the space about how you get more resources, because we always want more resources.
Uh huh. Yeah, and I think that's still true today. I just listed all the people that we have on our team now, and we could certainly use more, because especially in baseball, not only is there new content being created every day, but I think one thing that a lot of people don't always think about when it comes to content with baseball is the shelf life on it is so short.
Right.
Because I kind of joke around with our friends at the Seahawks, but I mean, if they have a great play on Sunday, they have the whole week to do all kinds of fun stuff with it. I mean, if we have a walk-off win on Saturday night, we literally have less than 12 hours to talk about it. And most people are sleeping for, you know, eight of those if they're getting their recommended hours of sleep, of course. But not only do you need people to just handle all that content, but turn it around quickly, because if I spend 30 minutes on something, it's 30 minutes I can't spend on something else. So, but as far as how we grow, because we recognized early on, that we would need to grow. And so a big part of that is, I think you take a step back and say, okay, what does it take to get a new employee? And a lot of times that means when you're talking to people at the executive level, it's justifying that new employee. And mm-hmm. the best way to justify that is to show actual data, actual metrics that, mm-hmm. that back that up, all the KPIs. And so a big focus of mine from day one really has been to track the different, the performance, you know, the amount of engagement, but also the revenue that we're able to generate from these posts. Because look, if I can say that, you know, every post generates X number of dollars, and we could do, you know, twice as many if I had another employee, that's an easier sell than just saying, well, everybody's on social media, so we need more people.
And when you talk about revenue, And dude, we're having a great conversation with Nathan Rauschenberg, senior digital marketing manager for Seattle Mariners. And I can already tell this is going to be one of those conversations where I'm going to have like 8 billion more questions to ask when we're done. When you talk about tracking revenue, is that primarily speaking in terms of, I guess, the old school way of how many tickets do we sell? How much revenue we make from ticket sales? Or is it also, you know, the fact that these are fans that are then going to be more responsive to our Facebook ads? Or the branding value, the impressions, the website traffic, the data capture. If we do a sweepstakes, we get a bunch of emails added. Sponsorship content, obviously. Is it that nuanced, or is it at least did it start out as more black and white? You know, how many tickets do we sell from that ticket link?
Yeah, it's a little bit of all of those things. I mean, at its most basic level, of course, revenue is going to play a role. But I mean, this is true with just advertising in general. I can tell you that ad we ran on SeattleTimes.com generated a certain amount of dollars because this many people clicked through and actually purchased tickets to the game. But what that doesn't account for is all the people that saw the ad, then they saw the TV commercial, then they heard a radio ad, then their friends, you know, emailed them. And, you know, the reality is that there's a lot of different touch points along the way. And I think kind of the golden goose in all of this is being able to figure out where all they saw it and what to truly attribute to it. So, but really, the thing that I always go back to is we know people are on social media. We know that the first thing that they do when they wake up in the morning is open Facebook or Instagram or you know, something like that. And so, one of my early goals, and this is before we even like get into algorithms and all that, my first kind of objective or sort of goal was if somebody opens one of these apps or goes to one of these social networks, I want them to see something from the Mariners. And sometimes it's going to be something fun and interesting, and sometimes it's going to be a little more heavy on the sales side. Although we, again, with the algorithm, we have to dial that back or evolve that a little bit. But really, I just wanted to make sure everybody was, you know, we were top of mind, and hopefully in a fun, engaging way.
Yeah, that's definitely the name of the game. If you can get in front of someone every single day, that's how you build that connection, that fan for life. I do want to take a step back or kind of get a big picture because there's so many games, there's so many teams. Seattle's not an overcrowded market like some of the other markets are maybe, but definitely a market where you have to win over the hearts and minds. And the Mariners have been around for a while, which is good. But tell me a little about who the Mariners are trying to be, who they want to be. I think you had ups and downs in your time there in terms of how the team's performed. You've had your huge stars and you've had your up and comers. Everyone from Ichiro and Robbie Cano and just some of the lesser names that have been named. So tell me when you guys are thinking about a brand, whether it's now or a few years ago or heading to this season, who are the Mariners trying to be? How are you guys trying to market yourselves? And certainly I'm sure social plays a role in that.
Yeah. I mean, first and foremost, we want to be, we want to be in a World Series. We want to win a World Series. So that's obviously our number one goal. From a marketing standpoint, we can't really control what happens on and off the field. Right. So we obviously want to, when the team's hot, when the team's winning, we want to fan those flames. And when they're not, you have to start looking at some other places that are also important. I mean, number one, we have one of the best ballparks in baseball, and nothing beats coming to a baseball game in the summer, on a nice day. And I don't know how many times or out if you've visited Seattle during the summer, but especially when you spend 9 months of the year in rain. I think the secret about Seattle is July through September is just beautiful. And so the ballpark experience is something that we really want to celebrate. Just the playing outdoors and the green grass and the blue skies. And then something that the Mariners did really early on, and it actually goes back to when our ad agency, Jim Copacino and Betty Fujikato, when they first kind of formed, and all those great commercials that were pretty well known for, the key insight there was humanizing these players. It's easier for me to root for Robinson Cano when I feel like I know Robinson Cano a little bit better than just the guy on TV. And so some of those early commercials, what they celebrated, and this is back in the Ken Griffey Jr., Randy Johnson, Jay Buhner years, which was great because we had not only a lot of talent, but some pretty big personalities. And a lot of those commercials were celebrating those personalities and showing these guys sort of poke fun at themselves or being, everyday people, which is charming and delightful, but it made you like them. It's kind of hard to describe, but it makes them likable people. And what we're so lucky here because we actually have a lot of really likable guys on the field. I mean, I was just commenting because I just got back from spring training, and this has been true for a number of years now, but I mean, our clubhouse is surrounded by just really cool guys. Like, I feel like I could go have a beer with James Paxton and he could just be the most relaxed, easygoing, you know. Like I was telling you, I think before we were recording, when I was at spring training, I was walking around, with, you know, where the fans can go and, going back to our facility, and I look over and there's James Paxton, kind of no other players around. He's just casually walking, down the paved road, and a couple fans are chatting with him, and he's just, hey, what's going on? You know, he doesn't big league anybody. And that's how all of our guys are. So, anything that we can do to showcase that.
And I, especially the Mariners, it seems like even if someone's not a Mariners fan, if they look back in the last 20 years, they can probably list off a lot of the well-known players that have been through that franchise. You said Griffey. We know A-Rod. We know Randy Johnson. Jay Buhner. You had Ichiro. We're now Robinson Cano. Felix Hernandez. And do you guys, like, I guess it's hard not to notice that those are the superstars, and they, I'm sure, get the most engagement when you guys post about them. Is that kind of, do you guys try to take advantage of that fact, knowing that, hey, you know, even if we're losing, we still know that King Felix is gonna move the needle? Or do you kind of have to, or try to, you know, make sure that they know about the, you know, the seventh inning lefty specialist out of the bullpen, so that we can try to showcase every single personality? I'm sure it's a balance of both, but what's the thought process like behind building that kind of content?
Yeah, and actually, this is a great day even to discuss it, although I know this podcast isn't going to air right away. So, yeah, we have kind of this core group of guys, the Felix Hernandez, Robinson Cano, Nelson Cruz, Kyle Seegers,
yeah,
the guys that are established stars. And what I think Jerry DePoto, our general manager, has done a great job of doing is going out and getting guys that are not only young, not only talented, but that are going to be around here for a while. Mm-hmm. Guys that have contracts that are, you know, they're not on 1-year deals. They're guys that will be here for a few years. So like Dee Gordon, for example, who has a great personality and he's just awesome. But what we're trying to do with our content, and you'll see very shortly in this new campaign we're calling I'm a Mariner, we're highlighting kind of the guys, I just named 4 or 5 of our guys. We're looking at our roster, you know, 6 through 15 or 6 through 20, mm-hmm. Those young guys or newer guys that our fans don't really know as well. And trying to through some short, easily consumable videos, help explain who they really are, you know, why they're important to the Mariners, and what they might be like off the field, which has been pretty fun to work with. Because, like I said, they're all really cool guys, but they also have interesting little stories. You know, Mike Leake is our first one, and so yeah, by the time this airs, it should be out there. But I didn't know this about him. He used to visit Seattle as a kid because his aunt lives here. And so he became a Mariners fan, and like his aunt would send him Mariner Moose related stuff. So he was a big Mariner Moose guy when we acquired him.
Wow.
Did not know that, but
that's phenomenal.
That's one area. Basically, we know that posting stuff about Robinson Cano is going to get engagement and people like him, and we still have to do that. We always say, you know, don't forget to play the hits.
Yeah.
But at the same time, let's make sure that we're highlighting some of these other guys that are soon going to be the hits. You know, the Mitch Hanigers, the James Paxtons,
yeah,
Mike Zunino. We actually have a lot of guys that seem to be right on the cusp of stardom themselves.
So I have to ask, I hate prefacing a question like that, but because, I mean, especially if people listening are big baseball fans like I am, they know that over the years, whether it was Jack Z, I'm not going to try to pronounce the last name, or even Jerry mm-hmm. DePoto now, that the Mariners have always been very active when it comes to trades. And so when we talk yeah. about, you know, promoting players, and heck, I mean, even creating, you know, in-game videos or you know, putting up posters and billboards, do you kind of have to have that thought process or even that discussion with PR and team ops to be like, should we be putting up this player, you know, as someone we should be getting fans to fall in love with, or is there a good chance that he's going to be gone by August 1st?
Yeah, I mean, those types of conversations happen, and I imagine they happen with all, you know, teams everywhere,
right.
Whether it's, you know, who's going to be featured in the commercials or who's going to have their own giveaway items, things like that. I feel pretty good about this roster where it's at because Jerry did such a good job of acquiring guys, like I said, that are going to be around for a while. But there was a period where it was for sure sort of questionable of how much we should do. I mean, my favorite recent example was having to Photoshop a prospect, Malik Smith,
yep,
into a Mariners uniform. We acquired him from the Rays. So we announced the trade, got a post out with him in a Mariners uniform, and then he was traded an hour later to the Braves. Or wait, I might be getting that mixed up. I can't remember. No, I can't remember which one was which. No, we must have. We got him from the Braves and traded him to the Rays. But the point is, we you know, we created content around him, and then an hour later, it was no longer. I mean, it was useful, but thankfully we. Yeah, heaven forbid we start doing something with him for a couple of days and then he's gone. So, I mean, I think the nature of the business, to answer your question.
Right.
I know that Jerry DePoto is pretty active. What that's actually done is made us really fast, really good at Photoshopping guys into Mariners uniforms and doing it quickly. We've got the process dialed in because
yeah.
Jerry's given us a lot of practice. But yeah, it does affect how you think about certain guys. Certainly, I would say more when it comes to like TV commercials that are going to run for 6 months.
Yeah.
In social, you can be pretty nimble. You know, you have to be. So that's not as big of a deal, but it's definitely something that you think about.
I'll make sure not to call you just to say hello, like on the trade deadline eve.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. I don't enjoy TweetDeck when both the winter meetings are going on and the trade deadline.
Oh,
all
gosh.
Those fake accounts.
Oh, we've all been duped before by fake accounts. Fake Ken Rosenthal, fake
yep.
Jason Stark. They'll get you.
Yep.
One more quick question before we get into this shareable stat, and I could talk to you for days, I think, but I do kind of want to hear because we are heading into the season now, and. You know, it's now's the time to be prepping for a long, long season ahead, hopefully through October. So what goes into preparing for a season from a digital marketing and social perspective? Is it a lot of templates, thinking about your hashtag and what that's going to look like, building gifts for players? And what goes into, you know, what have you guys been spending your time on the last, you know, month and a handful of weeks? And what goes into preparing for a Major League Baseball season for the Mariners?
Yeah, well, I mean, it actually really starts even, honestly, as soon as the previous season ends. I mean, we definitely take a little bit of a breather and it turns into more normal office hours. But as soon as the season ends, I mean, we're looking at not only what can we be doing during the off season, but how can we be preparing for the regular season. And some of that can be simple things like, you know, at that point, football is going on. So really paying attention to cool stuff happening there. I mean,
mm-hmm.
some of the coolest stuff I think happening right now is in college football because there's
no doubt.
Just so much that they're investing a lot, but also they have just a ton of super talented students in there just creating crazy stuff that's pretty inspiring. And so we're, you know, paying attention to that. We are looking at, you know, templates because like we discussed, you got to move quick and you also have to do things a lot of times. So
right.
What's a not only a cool looking lineup graphic, but something, you know, how can we build this in a way that is that doesn't take hours on end to build? Because if we're spending multiple hours putting together a lineup, that means that we don't have those hours to spend on more engaging stuff than that.
How do you kind of balance that long season, Nathan? Like, do you do you guys, and I'm sure part of it is a routine. We want to get into a game to routine. We're going to post our lineup graphic before the game. We're going to do this in the morning. We're going to do this, you know, or get our BP picture up. Do you kind of get into that routine and plan it out, or do you try to deviate from the routine to sort of keep fans on their toes and not let them get, I guess, desensitized to even great access?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, and that's something that I'm constantly thinking about. And it's also hard for me because I'm around it all the time. So yeah. I see something a lot, and I instantly am like, oh, this is getting boring, when that may not even necessarily be true for the standard fan. Right. But you're right. When you do something 162 times, it starts to kind of become eyewash. You know, it's just another thing that's easily tuned out. So we are, who was it? I think it was Bleacher Report. I was reading an article recently where they create these templates and to do things fast, but then their rule was the second it became easy, or once they figured out too many shortcuts, basically, that was when they knew it was time to scrap that template and build a new one, which I love. I mean, that's really intimidating, especially when you're trying to keep things on brand.
Yeah.
But it's an ongoing conversation, an ongoing challenge for sure, especially in baseball.
Just never let yourself get too comfortable, I guess, is the name of the game. That's interesting.
For sure.
Oh, I can go so much longer, Nathan. We might have to have a part two. Maybe not during the season because you'll be a little busy, but maybe after November when you guys are done.
The parade.
There you go.
We'll record it at the parade. We'll do a live one.
Hey, I might have to fly up there to go to it now. You're already getting me thinking about a victory parade. But we're having more fun. We come in our extra innings segment, Nathan. We'll be right back with that in just a moment.
Phenomenal chat with Nathan Rauschenberg, senior digital marketing manager of the Seattle Mariners. Just really good guy, really smart, articulate, and definitely they know what they're doing there. But we'll have some more fun with Nathan coming up in our extra innings segment. But first, this episode's shareable stat. And this episode's shareable stat looks at the recent National Women's Hockey League game, All-Star game, NWHL. You know, the U.S. Women's National Team just won gold. And a really astounding number came out that had nothing to do with the Olympics. This was from before the Olympics. So while this number is definitely high, it did not have anything to do with the gold medal that the women won. And that number is 580,000. 580,000 unique viewers for the NWHL. That's the Pro Women's Hockey League in the U.S. There's also the Canadian version up there as well. But the NWHL also came on Twitter, which is streamed on Twitter exclusively, had 580,000 unique viewers. That's got to make you stop. I mean, we don't think of women's hockey by any means, you know, especially the NWHL as being a major attractive sport in terms of eyeballs. So to capture 580,000, and it's not like you go onto the Yahoo website and it starts playing automatically. You're scrolling down your Facebook feed, it starts playing automatically. Live video on Twitter is a pretty intentional experience. 580,000 actually clicked to watch and see, you know, what is this NWHL All-Star game all about? And that's pretty impressive for the NWHL. So what does it mean? What can we learn from it? Well, we already know that Twitter is very gung-ho about live sports. You know, recently, they announced a deal with Major League Baseball to stream games. They also announced a deal with MLS to stream some of their games. They've been doing football, of course, and just a lot of live streaming and the niche sports as well. And it's clearly an area that they want to continue to get better at and add more content with. But it's also pretty cool for a league like the NWHL that's trying to get more exposure and can capture that many fans that, you know, the sports fans are on there, first of all. But what does it mean if you're with a team or you're with an organization? Well, it's certainly that live content, and sports is, you know, obviously a sweet spot with so many fans on Twitter. Live content has some legs in it for intentional viewing, and Twitter is, of course, where live is at. So maybe you can work with another sports team or an amateur team and showcase some of that. Esports obviously has a lot of potential, whether it's Twitch or Twitter as well. Use your production capabilities, use your broadcast capabilities to try your own experiments with live sports. You may not control all your content, but hey, you know what you do control? You control, say, a skills competition, a trick shot contest, little bits of live content that you can create in advance, and you can promote in advance, rather, and capture some of those fans that are looking for something to do, looking for content that they may enjoy, that may surprise and delight them. That 580,000 number has got to be exciting for the NBA, NWHL and for Twitter, and is definitely one to think about, you know, if you work in and around sports business as well. All right, that's episode of Cerebral Sat. 580,000 people clicked in to watch the NWHL All-Star Game on Twitter earlier this year. All right, we'll be right back with Nathan Rauschenberg of the Seattle Mariners for a little extra innings.
All right, back with this episode of Shareable Stat, and I'm joined once again by Nathan Rauschenberg, Senior Digital Marketing Manager for the Seattle Mariners, the soon-to-be world champ Seattle Mariners, hopefully, knock on wood. had a great time in our interview. You hit a home run, you circled the bases, you struck out the side, whatever you want to use. Are you now ready to go into a little extra innings?
Well, I mean, if I just hit a walk-off home run, I don't think it's necessary, but let's do it.
Hey, it expires quickly, like you said. You had a walk off and run. You got another game tomorrow afternoon. So
that's right. Yeah.
Number Double one header. For you, Nathan. Tell me your favorite campaign. Looking back at your time with Copacino and Fujikawa, maybe it was the Goldfish campaign, and what you learned from it.
Yeah, you know, when we first talked about this, I thought the question was going to be favorite commercial, but campaign is okay. Well. Because I like talking about this commercial.
Let's hear it. I want to hear that now.
I'll do that. Okay. And maybe you've seen it. Maybe you've seen it out there. But let's see. Well, Felix Hernandez, you know, he only pitches every 5 days. Mm-hmm. And he was our, you know, especially at that point, he was kind of one of our only stars, maybe our only star at the time. And, you know, he's a competitor. He really wants to get out there. If he could pitch every day, he would. And so the commercial opens on our manager in the dugout, you know, encouraging everybody. And then he looks out to the mound and says, oh, geez. And he walks out. He's like, Felix, I know you love Pete, but you just pitched yesterday. And then it cuts to Felix, and he's wearing a giant mohawk with the, you know, glasses and taped on sideburns. And he's like, I'm Jerry. Or no, he said, I'm Larry. I can't ruin that part. He said, I'm Larry. And then, you know, he pans around and you see that he's taped over his last name. It's Hernandez instead of Hernandez. It's a pretty simple concept, but just like it tells you a little bit about who Felix is as a pitcher, you know, a competitor, as a baseball player. And, you know, again, sort of having fun, you know, he's this star guy, but he's dressed up in this ridiculous outfit. And, you know, any person that's willing to do something like that is okay in my book. I think that I like them more because they're willing to do that. So I love that spot.
That's great.
I love you know, to answer your question about favorite campaign, I also did like the Leonard the Goldfish campaign, and I can't even take credit for it because it's just a really smart little campaign to highlight how unique the fish are at the Seattle Aquarium.
Oh, I'm still loving it. I gotta look at that Felix commercial now and see it. That's how you endear players to your fans, is see them having a little bit of fun and laugh along with them. That's great. All right, number two for you, Nathan. I want you to fill in the blank for me. Tell me the most valuable channel for digital marketing today is what? I mean, Facebook, email, Twitter, YouTube, Google, and why?
I'm going to go with Instagram. That's where we see our highest engagement. That's mm-hmm. where, you know, we have a really big audience as it is. It's what people use on a daily basis. I mean, you have to think all of the things that you listed, you have to keep in mind. You can't fall in love with any one particular one,
right.
But I'm constantly trying to figure out how we can get better at Instagram, because I think that's where people are, and that's where we have so much good content everywhere. So it's just a matter of packaging that up, getting the right photos and the right message at the right time.
Yeah, Instagram is definitely killing it these days, and such a wide audience there. Definitely a good one. All right, number three mm-hmm. for you. Kind of flipping that question around to some degree. Which platform is the most underrated? Which do you think doesn't get enough love that should?
Yeah, it's weird to say it, but I don't think enough people talk about Facebook. I mean, mm-hmm. you talk about large audiences and where to spend your time. I mean, to answer a different question that I don't think you have on your list, I think as sports marketers, sometimes we spend too much time on Twitter. And one thing I like to do when I'm out and about with, you know, casual friends or people that may, you know, they like, I know that they go to Mariner games, but they're not like the diehard season ticket holder types. I always ask them, you know, about what social media they are on. And I just don't hear Twitter a lot from them. And I ask my nieces too the same question, and you just don't hear Twitter. So I'm not here to rip on Twitter, but right. I think that a lot of times I have TweetDeck up and I'm like, well, not only is this distracting, but this probably isn't even the platform that I should be looking at the most often. I should be figuring out how we can, you know, what can we do to not necessarily beat the algorithm, but how can we've got over a million people that like us on Facebook. How can we reach that audience or, you know, as much as possible?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. You know, a lot of times it is easy to forget that we are not the fans. We are not an average fan. You know, we're mm-hmm. in this space. We're surrounded by it, and you know, we live on those platforms. And you got, yeah, and I'm definitely the same way. We're kindred spirits there, where I am constantly asking others what they use, and I'm looking over shoulders, probably like a little mm-hmm. bit creepy at times at games, trying to see yep. what people are posting on. But yeah, it's so important to be a student, and Facebook is one of those that gets a bad rap, but yeah, people are on it every day, whether they're willing to admit it or not.
Yep.
Number four for you, I want to know in your time with the Mariners, what's your favorite piece of content or campaign or whatever, however you want to take it.
Yeah, so I am lucky to be in this role at a time when Ken Griffey Jr. was inducted into Cooperstown, or into the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. First Mariner to go in, obviously a once in a generation type player,
yeah.
Five tools, and also just incredibly marketable in general. So, you know, when you think of the Mariners, most people think of Ken Griffey Jr. We also retired his number too. So the challenge that we had on the social side was, you know, how do we even do this? This is kind of intimidating, because not only is he such a big, you know, person in Mariners and Seattle sports, but also knowing that, you know, there, all of these photos have been seen, and everybody knows, you know, about the 630 home runs that he hit and all those amazing catches. So what can we do in the lead up to these two big events this summer that talk about Griffey in a way, maybe that's a little different. And what we landed on was 24 stories. And we created 24
yeah.
short stories, roughly 2 minutes each. And we picked just different topics to kind of go a little more in depth on. And in some cases they were literal stories. We had Rick Riz, longtime Mariners broadcaster, tell the story of the greatest call he's ever made on a Griffey play. And then we tracked down, a gentleman by the name of Cola, who was formerly known as Kid Sensation, who Griffey, did a rap, on one of his tracks. So he actually wow. turns out in talking to him, turns out they were around the same age. Well, they are around the same age still today, but at the time they were both in their early 20s, mm-hmm. kind of rising in how well known they were in the Seattle market. They kind of became good friends. So anyway, we went to his house in Tacoma, had him tell stories about Griffey and talk about that song that they put together. But anyway, 24 different stories. I think each one is interesting and engaging on its own, but put together, you know, a lot of work, but I'm really proud of how it came together. And we unveiled one a day in the 24 days leading up to his number retirement.
That's
which
awesome.
Also overlapped with his induction.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun and a great way to give fans that constant snack of content every day. And I'll just close that out by saying hopefully Edgar will be there soon enough too. All right.
Oh, my gosh, I know. And 11 stories is easier than 24.
Very true. Very true. Number five for you. I want to know, the Seattle Sounders are such an interesting case study to me. The MLS is full of these teams that some of them do amazingly, some of them not so much, and the Sounders are definitely one in that amazing category. So why do you think the Sounders are so successful?
I think the first – well, yeah, you're totally right. They've done an incredible job, and that's been true from day one. I mean, the all the traditions that they established right away to build this culture, I mean, it helps that there's a big soccer fan base here in Seattle. I mean, soccer is actually can't believe I'm saying this, but I play soccer multiple times a week. I don't necessarily play baseball during my off time. So I love soccer too. But what I think the Sounders have done better than most teams is truly knowing their audience.
Yeah.
And knowing, you know, what they want to stand for and who they're truly trying to appeal to. And they don't go so broad that they appeal to nobody. Whether it's the young, really kind of the like ideal, I guess what you would think of as a Seattleite, sort of the hipster drinking coffee, young, tech savvy. And they've embraced that. And I think both in how they market it and the different things that they do around their game and the atmosphere, it's really fun going to a game, from the march to the match, to the different chants that they do. I haven't been to a soccer game in other places, so it's hard for me to compare necessarily, but I think from afar you've noted that they're great. So I have reason to believe that they're unique in that.
And the Sounders do a really good job. I'm always fascinated to see that. And they definitely have built that tribe, so to speak, and that cool hip culture. I do want to hear, speaking of that, I kind of want to hear about who else you think does a good job. So number six for you is the best non-MLB team and the best non-Seattle team on social media, and why?
Well, I have to admit, I am always, you know, I talked about loving the college football accounts and all the talent that is over there. So I will start by saying Clemson, Clemson football. I mean, they're seen as leaders. And I think South Carolina too, just those are two teams that I really admire, their video production and their creativity in terms of the stuff that they're putting out there. I am not a Clemson football fan, but because of their great content, I follow along, and I know more about their team than most college football teams out there. They just continue to find unique ways to. South Carolina had a video unveiling their uniform for, I don't even think it was a particularly important game, or I don't even know, I don't know enough about their uniform history to know if this was significant at all. But the video they made was so cool that I watched it, five times, because it was fun, it was exciting. It made me want to run through a brick wall. And I love when it comes to college football, a lot of them, they're mostly trying to appeal to the recruits, which I love that. I mean, it's kind of back to the Sounders, knowing your audience. And it's funny because I think they're trying to appeal to these young, super talented football players that want to look cool on social media, but they end up making stuff that everybody thinks is cool as a result.
Yeah, that's a sweet spot. It's when you have the stuff that works well for recruits and also just that fans love it. And it's usually a pretty good crossover, I think. And how about all right? No, those are some great answers. I do love the Gamecocks, and they've really stepped it up recently. They do a great job, and certainly Clemson is the standard, basically, just about. And even up in your neck of the woods too, UW is definitely stepping up their game in the last couple of years, and it's good to see them doing well as well. All right,
for sure.
Number seven for you. I want to know your favorite Mariners moment in your time with the team. What sticks out to you when you're like, I'm never going to forget that.
Yeah, well, I'd have to go with Felix Hernandez's perfect game.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. It's funny because Safeco Field, we had never had even a no-hitter at this ballpark. And then early that year, it was 2012, so this is my first season. Early that year, Philip Humber threw a perfect game against us, which was, while, you know, you don't want that to happen, of course, but it was part of history, so it was interesting to watch. And then later, maybe a month or two later, we threw a six-man combined no-hitter, which was unique. And then in August, Felix Hernandez, the probably one of the few, at that point we had traded Ichiro, so I think it's safe to say he was basically our only star player at the time. Again, he's a competitor, so this is a game. I think we're out of contention at that point or any realistic shot at the playoffs. And he goes out on a sunny Wednesday afternoon and throws a perfect game. So it was not only cool from a historic standpoint, but just knowing what Felix means to the Mariners and this city, just to see him go out and do something that only 22 other pitchers had accomplished in the majors was amazing. And then after the game, you know, I'm down on field capturing photos of different things and ended up my group, some of my coworkers and I got a photo with him on the mound after the perfect game. So that was
that's awesome.
Definitely one of those moments where it feels a little surreal.
Oh, it's so great. If we had another podcast, though, I want to definitely hear about what that was like from a social media play-by-play in your mind when you're trying to tweet that out. That's probably so much fun.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Number eight for you, Nathan. I want to know the player with the biggest personality on the team over the years and also the one that's currently on the team with the biggest personality, if it's different answer.
Well, when I think of big personalities, I mean, I can't help but think of Munenori Kawasaki, who was on the team when I first started in 2012, but he didn't let his, you know, limited knowledge of the English language at that time stop him from just being hilarious on and off the field. If video were more prominent in 2012, I would have basically put a camera on him at all times, because he was always doing something. And I know our players really loved that energy and goofiness. I mean, when you play 162 games, you gotta have some fun in there, or it starts to wear you down. And currently on the team, I mean, we have a lot of big personalities. I mean, it's probably not surprising to say somebody like Robinson Cano. Right. I mean, he kind of gives off this cool, you know, swag vibe, but there is no laugh like Robinson Cano's in the clubhouse. And I mean, he's definitely one of those guys where if you're around him and he's laughing, you can't help but laugh too, because he's just, man, everything that he hears that's funny, it sounds like it's the funniest thing he's ever heard in his life, which is just great, and it's infectious. We have the batting stance guy in the clubhouse about a week ago, really, and actually we're working on turning that video around right now, but I was able to sit in on that meeting as he did impressions of various guys.
And oh, wow.
Robinson was basically on the floor dying.
Oh, that's phenomenal.
Of course. When it got to him, he wasn't laughing.
Of course. Oh, it sounds like a fun clubhouse there for sure. All right, I want to know number nine. This is definitely always a favorite question. If I go up to Seattle, what is the best food to get there, and where do I need to get it?
Oh my gosh! Well, I'm a little biased because I live in West Seattle, and we actually just did a video with two of our guys visiting this place. So I'm giving them a lot of love lately, and I'm hoping to get some type of like loyalty, like, you know, free meal every time I come in. So I'll just give them one more shout out, but it's called Marination. It's on the water in West Seattle. So it's a great little view of, Seattle itself and the city. It's right next to a water taxi that can take you right to downtown if you want, but it's also just a cool place to hang out, and they serve just these amazing sliders. They have shaved ice, shave ice, as we were corrected on social media, so I learned. And so it's not necessarily your traditional, you know, Seattle food, which would probably be like salmon, but, you know, and it's more Hawaiian themed, but it's delicious and you will not regret it.
Hey, it sounds good to me. And it, once it reaches, you know, millions and millions of ears that are listening to this podcast, you should get free meals for life.
I'm not going to send this to my mom right away. I'm definitely sending it to Marination.
Oh, I love it. Number 10 for you, Nathan. When we look ahead to the season, who's going to be the breakout player in the Mariners? Who's maybe someone we may not know too much about now, but we're all going to be talking about by the end of the year?
Well, I hope, and I think I'll be right, but Mitch Haniger, who was sort of a secondary piece in a trade we made with Arizona. We acquired Gene Segura, who was and has been an all-star and a 300 hitter. Mitch Haniger at that point was still sort of a prospect, had a great year with us last year, had a couple sort of unlucky injuries. He got hit in the face by a pitch, so that set him back. I think he is going to be a breakout player for sure.
I will keep an eye on Mitch Haniger, and I'm stashing him in my fantasy draft queue now. Keep an eye there. Really enjoyed our extra innings. You hit the walk off again. So you know we're all in good spot there. You're clutch. Now your chance to take over the podcast and tell us your social media all star to follow them, who they are, and whether they're on Twitter or Blogger, wherever they are, and why they're worth following.
So we talked about this earlier before recording, but I won't give a shout out to Jessica Smith or Jess Eagle because everybody does it. But you know, she is a good follow. I mean, basically the people that I like to follow are either great resources for discovering stuff or just inspirational in general. So one of my recent favorites, somebody that I find myself going back and looking at their work or their profile is, and I wish I knew how to say his name because, you know, I only know it from Twitter. And let me look it up real quick just so I can even attempt. I believe it's pronounced Joe Saioni. That's how I would pronounce it.
Yeah.
Kind of Italian. But he's the web and with digital Cavs, designer for the Cavs. Does a lot of really cool work, and I mean he's got a great subject in LeBron James to design for. But what I also like, so one, I mean I'm always on the lookout for cool designs for inspiration. But I also like that he kind of shows before and after. So that alone is inspiring because you can see how even just sort of a basic photo can become a masterpiece, if you will.
Oh yeah, he's a fantastic ball. He does such a every once in a while, a team will throw out a graphic that just makes your thumb stop and make you go, wow. And it feels like every single night, postseason, championships, milestones, regular season games, it doesn't matter if it's, you know, the game 54 or game, you know, 95. It's always just, it's fire. That's a great one for sure. All right. How about yourself, man? Where can we find you and all things Mariners on digital and social?
Jeez, well, you can find me more often than not if you search for N. Rauschen, most social handles. I usually go, you know, when you have a unique last name, while it can be a pain to write out and a pain for others to spell correctly, at least you know it's going to be unique and you don't have to add a bunch of numbers.
Very true.
Yeah, you know, nobody else has it. So N. Rauschen. You know, and then when it comes to the Mariners, we're at Mariners, we've got Safeco Field, we've got the Mariner Moose, we've got all kinds of secondary accounts as well.
Very nice. We'll be on the lookout for everything. You're already some great content coming out over spring training, and we got a fun season ahead, and really can't thank you enough for coming on the podcast today. It's been great to get to pick your brain a little bit, and we know it's close to the season, so not as much free time as hopefully you had a little bit of it in January. Just really looking forward to the season ahead, and we appreciate you coming on today.
Hey, I had a great time, and I can't wait to do this around roughly November 1st or so. I'm just gonna hold off that day so we can record from the parade.
I'm blocking out my calendar now. I love it. It's gonna be a lot of fun. All right, best of luck this season, and we'll definitely be in touch.
Thanks. Talk to you soon.
Well, thanks so much again, Nathan Rauschenberg, Senior Digital Marketing Manager for the Seattle Mariners. Just so much fun talking to him. Really enjoy following what the Mariners do on social media. I recommend you start doing so as well if you're not already. And baseball's tough. There's a lot of games. It's a long season. There's a lot of tickets to sell. There's a lot of content. The ups don't last too long. The downs don't last too long either. They do a great job there, of course, and it was really a pleasure to pick Nathan's brain. But that'll do for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thanks again for downloading and listening. Again, I'm your host, Neil Horwitz. You can follow me on Twitter at NJH287, as well as on LinkedIn. And you can also find other content on my LinkedIn, as well as at the website, dsmsports.net, and find other podcast episodes there, and also on Stitcher Radio and Apple Podcasts. Until next time, this is Neil Horwitz signing off for the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.